Okay, everybody. Are the door prize people ready?
Daryl?
Daryl, are you here? I hope Daryl's here.
I don't know where Daryl is.
Can you do it, Casey?
Yeah, what is this here?
Do you have the door prizes, Casey?
I think we got some here.
All right. Give away the big $500 one. Let's shake Daryl up.
Okay, this is donated by Lisa and Reggie George. It's a $5 Starbucks card inside. And there's other things inside here. I'm not sure what they are. So we're going to draw for this. All these cards are different sizes. So I don't, well, Julie Brannon is the winner. And Julie, I don't know if she's in here, but she is working, so.
Julie is running the Women's Expo. Should we say she's working?
Yeah.
All right, Julie gets that prize. That seems fair. You guys will have to get it to her.
Okay. You want another one?
Yep.
All right.
I promise two.
Okay, this is donated by Lisa and Reggie George. This is another $5 Starbucks. And this one goes to Diane Young.
Are you here?
Is she here, Diane Young?
Okay, all terrific. Right. Thank you, Casey.
You're welcome, Sue.
Well, our next topic is really, I think, always timely and very, very important. I know some of you guys have heard parts of this at your chapter meetings, but when we decided to do this topic, I really wanted to hear from our Attorney General's office because they do so much work in this area of consumer fraud and identity theft. We are very lucky today to have the Director of Outreach and Education, these titles always throw me, with us. His name is Eric Moss. Eric has done a lot of job work on this. He also will have available out at the volunteer desk Braille and print material for folks to pick up if you'd like to have anything. So I'm not going to take any more of his presentation time. I present to you from the Attorney General's office, Eric Moss.
All right, thank you so much. I'm going to move my computer off this side so I can just reach it.
There we go.
All right, first I want to say thank you so much for inviting me to come and speak with your group. Events like this are really kind of what I enjoy doing the most. My job is the outreach education coordinator for our office, which means I travel the whole state and I speak with groups all across the state. Can everyone hear me okay? I can't hear. Okay. I can yell pretty loud, so if the microphone fails us, we'll. There's a couple of things I have to say that I'm required to say every time I talk to a group of people. The first is, one, I am not an attorney, so we are all in luck there. The second thing I have to say is that my opinions are my opinion alone and not the opinions of the Attorney General's office or the Attorney General. An attorney wrote that for me. I have to say that. And the third thing I have to say is that if there is information or letters or correspondence that you want to share with the Attorney General's office, I'm not allowed to take those. There's a couple of good reasons for that. The first one is that I travel a ton and it may not make it back to the office in a timely manner. The second is that I am clumsy and I lose everything. I would lose your letter before we got to the car, and that's not good for anybody there. Those are the three things I have to say. This is an especially exciting event for me because I've learned a ton. When Sue contacted me a while ago and asked if I would be here, I was very excited about it. And I have a process. If anybody knows government or state government, there's forms and processes and questions. And I was working down the question list with her, and there's the one at the bottom that says, will there be a projector and PowerPoint available? And I asked the question, and then I realized, well, maybe not. So, and Sue has been incredibly kind and patient with me to learn a lot of things. So from that first phone call, I've learned a ton about resources that our office does provide and things that we can do better to make things accessible for the blind and for the Attorney General's office. Real quick, I wanted to share, I learned that there are even attorney jokes that are blind themed. And so I wanted to share one with you. I thought it would be fun. A blind rabbit and a blind snake bump into each other on a trail, and the snake reaches out and touches the rabbit and says, "Oh, you're furry and you have a fluffy tail. You must be a rabbit." And the blind rabbit reaches out and touches the snake and says, "Ooh, you're cold and slithery and wet. You must be a lawyer." And so it goes to show that there are appropriate jokes. Now I say that, but I work in a law firm for the Attorney General's office. We're the state's largest law firm. And we represent the state of Washington and their interests, meaning the governor, the legislature, the University of Washington, even the school over there in Pullman. I don't want to say their name. No, I'm just kidding. Remember that part about my opinions being my opinions. So we represent other committees. We represent any state committee or organization that is funded with state dollars or organized by a state, by the legislature. That means that we're their attorneys, and we don't do individual legal services. This is an important thing to remember, is that we don't represent individuals. We represent the state's interests. And I say this is important because we did a radio show not too long ago where a caller called and asked if, speaking of scams and fraud, she said, "So speaking of scams and fraud, I need to talk to you guys. I feel like I've been scammed the last 25 years, and I want to know if you help with divorce." And unfortunately, that's not what we do. If it's marriage is kind of a buyer beware, you have to. But there are areas in our office, there are divisions that do directly represent the people of the state. So in a way, we are your attorneys, but we're not your individual attorneys. We're your attorney as a group of people, right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So, for example, I work in the Consumer Protection Division. Our division represents the interests of the people of the state of Washington. So if there are scams and fraud that are targeting communities or organizations or any specific group of people in the state of Washington, and I don't say Washington state citizens, if you spend money in the state of Washington, you're a consumer. If you live in Oregon or Idaho or anywhere and you spend money here, you're a consumer, and Washington state consumer law protects you as well. That's the kind of the crux of what our division does, is we represent the people of the state of Washington as consumers. Now, there's another part of our division that also represents the people, and that's the Civil Rights Unit. This is a pretty new unit. They just started about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and they're interested in representing the people of the state as well as a whole, but on civil rights measures. And in researching for this talk today, I spoke with our Civil Rights Unit chief, and she wanted me to let you know that absolutely our office is interested in hearing about cases of discrimination when it comes to abilities or disabilities. So I won't get too much into that because civil rights is a really tough issue to break down. But you should know that there is information available, and you do have rights, civil rights in the state of Washington that we can help you protect. Some of those are in employment, in housing, in public services. So if you're unable to utilize public services because of a vision impairment or you're blind, we want to hear about that. We want to hear about different ways that the blind or vision impaired may be discriminated against in the state. That's one of the things that we do want to hear about from your group. But I'm here to talk about consumer issues, about how you spend your money and how people try to scam you out of it. The first thing I want to talk about really is the nation's largest scam. The Federal Trade Commission calls this the nation's largest scam, and they say it's not a matter of if you get this phone call, it's when you get this phone call. So how many of you, just raise your hands real quick, if your friends with the IRS have called you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so Sue says clap so everybody knows that you've got that phone call. Yeah. You can hear that's a lot of people in this room. They make this phone call so often that I've gotten it on my desk phone at work. They've called me at the Attorney General's office and threatened to arrest me if I don't pay my taxes. I did. It was a real person this time. And they said, we're going to come arrest you if you don't pay your taxes. And I said, please, here's the address. Please show up. And no one ever showed up. They hung up on me. But there's some things that you should know about this. I'm going to play a clip really quick of what one of these typical phone calls may sound like. They vary from tactic to tactic. Sometimes they call and say, oh, we have money to give you back from the IRS. We just need your bank account information. Yeah. Or they call and say, your taxes were filed, but we need a little more follow-up information. Please call us back. How many of you know the IRS will never, ever, ever call you? Ever. Right? Yeah. There you go. They will send you 14 pieces of mail, but they won't call you and make threats. We're going to listen to this clip really quick. It's like a minute long. It's hard to understand in part of it because it is a recording. But then we'll talk about what's in the clip here. Make sure this is on. There we go.
This is Austin Holmes with the Department of Legal Affairs at U.S. Treasury. I was trying to reach you in regards to a very important issue. This is a verbal notification for you in regards to the enforcement action that have been started under your name. My number is 951-888-9785. I'll repeat, that is 951-888-9785. If for any reason you are busy to call back, I would suggest you to have your RICO attorney to do it for you. As the line calling us might end up into a legal mess for you, I hope you would take this right and call me as soon as possible. This is Austin Hall with the Department of Legal Affairs. Looking forward to speak to you. Until then, have a great day. Goodbye.
So a lot of us have gotten phone calls just like that one. So let me talk about that phone call for a minute, okay? There, what he said was, we have some legal action against you. He starts with a threat, right? Now this goes true with the IRS. This goes true with any kind of government agency, big government, when we're thinking about, right? Even smaller governments such as cities or towns. They're not going to call and threaten you right off the bat. That's just not what they do. And I make this point by saying, how many of you think that if you were going to be arrested, they'd call and warn you first? Yeah. They're just going to show up and arrest you. That's what they'll do. So one, government does not call and threaten you. That's not what we do. If you do get a phone call from someone claiming to be from the government, claiming to arrest you or do harm to you or someone you know, please hang up the phone and call the police. Those are threats, and government doesn't make threats. The second thing that we didn't hear in that phone call is they oftentimes require a specific form of payment. So they'll say, this is John from the IRS. You owe money, and if you don't pay, we're going to arrest you. But I'll tell you what, you can pay part of it or all of it now, but you have to go down to Walmart and get a prepaid gift card. What we can learn from this is that any legitimate business, and I mean legitimate businesses or the government, won't require a specific form of payment. They're not going to make you go down to Walmart and get a prepaid gift card. In fact, it's getting so ridiculous that we're hearing now that these scam artists are getting so ridiculous. They're saying, go to Walmart and buy $500 in iTunes gift cards. That's absolutely true, and it's insane, isn't it, right? But people do it. And there's a lot of reasons people do it. When I say it out loud to us, it sounds silly and it sounds funny. But if you're a senior citizen or somebody who maybe doesn't have connections, or somebody who isn't necessarily really active in their own tax preparation or finances, and you get a phone call that says you're going to be arrested if you don't pay now, wow, you're going to be scared, right? Sometimes these phone calls, and this is something that we think is really terrible, is if you have the last name of, say, Gomez or Sanchez or any Latino last name, they will call and threaten you and say, if you don't pay your taxes, we're going to deport you. And we'll deport your families. And they'll say, but you know what? I was born in Bellevue, Washington. And they'll say, well, we don't care, that you can figure it out on the other side of the border, and then you can come back in. We're still going to arrest you and deport you. And it's a scare tactic, and it happens. So something to look out for, if you get a phone call from the government, be suspicious. You can hang up the phone, and you can find the number for that government agency and call them back from a number that you have verified on your own. That's our number one recommendation with any government phone call or big business, right? So I'm going to play another clip from the FTC that just talks about the IRS phone scam one more time. I keep turning the microphone off. Hold on.
Scam artists are pretending to be IRS officials to get your money. They'll call, email, or text you, claiming you owe back taxes or there's a problem with your tax return. They even rig caller ID to make their call look official. They play on your fears. They threaten to take your driver's license or sue, arrest, or deport you. They want you to pay fast. What's the truth? The truth is the IRS's first contact with you will always be a letter in the mail. It's not a phone call, email, or text message. They won't insist that you pay with a prepaid debit card, a wire transfer, or cashier's check. Now you know.
All right, so now we know, right? So the IRS phone scam, that's something that we know about now, right? Everyone in this room knows that the government's not going to threaten you. They're not going to demand a specific form of payment. If you want to pay your taxes in pennies, they'll take it from you. They don't care. So the next thing I want to talk about, I think, is relevant to this audience specifically, is technology scams, is because in my research about services offered for the blind, I've learned that a lot of the independent living that happens for people who are blind or vision impaired is available or capable of happening because independent living, technology, different technologies that allow the blind communities to be more independent and less dependent on other people, right? And so when it comes to technology, it's something we want to trust, right? And I was fortunate enough to sit in the back and listen to the last presenters talk about advancements in technology, and I think it's fascinating. From my point of view, I don't think that we're doing enough, and I don't think we're doing things quick enough. It's not like the last 10 years we just discovered that there were blind people in this country. And I don't think it's quick enough. I don't believe that we're providing services that are adequate enough. But I can tell you we're working on it. The Attorney General's office is also working on improving those services. So your technology, your computers, your cell phones, things that make living more independently possible, you want them to be reliable, right? Which means that when someone calls you and says, we've noticed there's a problem with your computer, right? I knew you were a smart bunch. I could tell already. I hear them, see the moans and groans. Just like big government, big technology is never going to call you. If anybody here uses a Microsoft computer, you know that they have no interest in it working well, and they're not going to call you. They're not going to call you and tell you there's problems. And I apologize to anyone here from Microsoft. No, we also work with Microsoft on a lot of issues. They're good partners in technologies against scams and fraud. Microsoft cares so much about these scams and fraud that they set up an internal crimes unit where you can report these technology scams to them. They have a vested interest in your trust in their business. So if you do get these phone calls, you know, someone who calls and says, hi, I'm calling, and we've noticed your computer's running slow. All I need is your username and password, and I can log in from where I am and help you fix it. I want to assure you that you have control over the situation. But what you also have control over are the pop-ups and the ads that come up on your screens. We're seeing a lot of people in the state file complaints about what's called malware or spyware, and oftentimes cases about something that's called ransomware. And ransomware is when someone takes control of your computer. So you click on a box that says, you need to download this update for your computer now. And the box oftentimes looks like something that might come from Microsoft, but it's really a pop-up from an ad or something. It looks legitimate, and they've tested it into some screen readers. The screen readers can verify the information, and it sounds legitimate. It's written in a way. And so you say, okay, I'll update my computer, and you click on the box. The next thing you know is that your computer is locked down, and you can't use it at all. And what's on the screen is a telephone number to call to pay a ransom for someone to unlock your computer for you. This is called ransomware. If you ever experience ransomware, please, please, please do not pay the ransom, because they'll do it to you again in a week or 2 weeks or a month. And when they unlock your computer, they don't remove the virus that installed that. What they do is they use your computer to pass it on to someone else. So if you do experience these problems with what's called malware or spyware or ransomware, our recommendation from our office is that you take your computer into a professional. And I say professional, a lot of people say, well, my son or grandson or husband or wife is really good at this, and I'm going to let them do it. That's okay, but it's not guaranteed. If you take it to a professional, they can wipe it clean and put it back together, just the way it was before the software was corrupted. These tech support scams are so common that we filed a lawsuit against a company about a year and a half ago called iYogi. iYogi was a company that was offering computer protection. So they would call you and say, we want to run a free diagnostic on your computer. It's free. And we're going to see if there's anything wrong. They ran the diagnostic, and wouldn't you believe it, every computer had something wrong. So then all of a sudden you're paying $35 a month, $25 a month, $45 a month for their software protection. The way we were able to bust them a little bit is that we have people in our division who are high-tech investigators. They know a lot about computers, and they wiped computers clean, factory restored them, had them pristine. There was not a single thing wrong with them. And then they called iYogi and said, can you look at our computers? We think there's something wrong. And wouldn't you believe it? There was about a dozen things wrong with these brand new machines. And on top of that, iYogi started billing us every month when we didn't consent to monthly billing. So we filed the lawsuit. We got, I think, somewhere around $14 million back from them that we returned to people in the state of Washington. It was a good case. It showed these big tech scam companies that Washington State isn't the place to try to scam people. But there's always scams out there. So I want to play another clip from the FTC. I work a lot with the Federal Trade Commission, so I freely use their materials. They've given us permission to. All of these clips I've played are available online on the FTC website, and they're clips from videos. But when I spoke with the people at the FTC, they said the videos themselves are designed to be also compatible just for audio clips alone. So I don't know if that makes a difference of whether you're going to go look at this stuff or not.
Scammers pose as big name companies. They call or send pop-up messages to scare you about the security of your computer.
We've gotten warnings of viruses in your area. Your computer has been affected. First, download this software so I can delete the dangerous program.
They're good at pretending to be someone they're not because they want something that isn't theirs, your money. No matter what they say, they haven't found anything wrong with your machine. They just want you to pay for software or tech support services you don't need. If someone pressures you, slow down and think it through. Don't give out your financial information, and don't let anyone take control of your computer.
That all kind of makes sense, right? So what we've learned so far is that the government's not going to call and harass you and threaten you. Big tech companies aren't going to call you and make you sweet offers that you can't refuse. And also, these companies aren't going to ask you for a specific form of payment, right? These are signs of scams across the board, right? Threats, offers that are too good to be true, and specific non-traceable forms of payment, right? Now, just because they ask for your credit card or checking account number doesn't mean that it's not a scam. You know, those scammers are counting on the idea that you're going to give that up. There's a couple. I have a few minutes here, so we're going to go through a couple more of these things. One of the things I wanted to mention was medical identity theft, and that's also an issue we see. We have a Medicaid fraud unit that investigates Medicaid fraud across the state. So if you or if somebody you know has experienced fraud or problems with their Medicaid that could be a sign of fraud, we want to hear about that. We investigate those and we return the money back to the state. We make sure that the benefits that you are entitled to aren't being used by other people. One case we hear about this is that we filed a suit against a medical hardware supplier who was selling wheelchairs, but he was buying using people's Medicare and Medicaid benefits illegally. It was identity theft to buy medical equipment, used medical equipment that was cheap, not well made, that was used, and then turning around and selling that to new clients at a markup or some kind of premium there. And so people who were using their Medicaid benefits were getting dinged twice. They were getting dinged for a wheelchair they never bought, and then when they did need a wheelchair, they were getting billed again. So they were exhausting their entire benefit in the course of a year. This can be a big issue. And now I'm looking across the room here, and I see some people in the room that may qualify for Medicare. And so... so I'm going to assume that we have our red, white, and blue cards or our Medicare cards with us. Our recommendation is that you do not carry your Medicare cards on you. Your Medicare ID number is your Social Security number followed by an A, B, C, or D. Or a combination of letters, right? So if you lose or you drop your Medicare card, you're giving someone access to your name and your Social Security number, which is exactly what someone needs to become you for identity theft. Sir, yes, ma'am?
You can't get into a hospital without that card.
Okay.
If you have an accident, yep, you're not going to get into ER.
So the statement was that you can't get into a hospital without the car. If you're in an accident, you can't get into an ER. I'm going to, let me address that real quick. That's a common concern of people, is that you must have the card, your Medicare card, to receive services. And that is absolutely, I don't want to say it's a common misconception. Hospitals are required to treat, and they can figure out the billing later. Now, it may mean that you're not taken to a preferred hospital. So if an ambulance picks you up, they may take you to Harborview instead of Swedish. Right? So an ambulance, if they don't see proof of insurance, they may take you to a different hospital than the one that's absolutely closest to them. But you will be treated. When you go to the doctor's office, a lot of doctors will say, we need to have that card to admit you in for the doctor's appointment today. That is not true. Doctors who accept Medicare as payment have access to a national system called CMS, and they're able to look you up inside CMS and verify your enrollment. They can also verify your billing. They will need your Social Security number to look you up, so you can tell them that in person, or you can, and they'll look it up at that point. Oftentimes, your first visit to a doctor, they'll make a copy of the card, so you don't have to carry it with you, and that's okay, because if your medical records are stolen, you have a lot more issues than just your Social Security number.
I'm on my mic over here.
Sorry, man. There you go.
Okay, I want to then. Every time that you go to the doctor, I go to a lot of different doctors, and they call you and they give you the recording that says, you know, your appointment is blah, blah, blah. And they always say, and be sure to come 15 minutes early and bring your Medicare and preferred provider cards. And they always make a copy. Now, once you've been to the doctor and they've made a copy, they don't need to see the cards again. But they do at least want to see them once. So how do you resolve that?
The first time you go, you can take your cards in with you. I don't receive Medicare, but I receive VA benefits through the Department of Veterans Affairs. And the first time I go to a doctor, I need my VA card with me. Every other time I go after that, they have that on record.
So you're just saying be careful when you take it and use it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so not never ever take it. I mean.
Right. It's not something you need to lock in a vault and never touch again. But it is something to be careful with. And, I think a lot of people, I'm learning a lot of people, didn't understand that the Medicare ID number was just their Social Security number with a combination of letters. I see a hand in the back there.
Are you ready for questions?
Almost.
Okay. Hold on. Is this on this topic? Okay. Is there a mic to get around?
Yep, Daryl's coming back.
No, we're on ACB radio, remember? And the radio won't pick you up. Poor Eric, he doesn't know he's on ACB radio. People are listening to you all over the world, Eric. Okay.
That's good. Let's get the message out.
We'll tell your boss.
Can you hear me okay? Okay. When my husband and I became on Medicare and then a supplement insurance, and we've been with our clinic since 92, every single time we go in there, even though they have a copy of our Medicare card, and I can give you the name of the clinic.
I don't need the
name. They make everybody who has Medicare as a primary and a supplement show their Medicare card. Or they have told us they will not serve us. Now, you're saying we can tell them that they could look us up on the CMS. What if they are not willing to do that? What would be our way of dealing with that? Because I do not like carrying my Medicare card with me. And my Medicare card is so old that it would fall apart one of these days.
No, that's an excellent question. Thank you. So what do you do if you go to a doctor's office and they refuse to provide services without you presenting your Medicare card? One, I would find a new doctor if you can. Or at least tell the doctor himself that the reception is not doing that, that they're being lazy. I would use the word lazy, because that's harsh. Also, if they refuse to provide you services because you won't present your Medicare card, you can go to the Washington State Office of the Insurance Commissioner and file a complaint there. And the Office of the Insurance Commissioner handles Medicare and Medicaid complaints. Those are places where you can go. You have resources. The Office of the Insurance Commissioner would, I present with them quite a bit, and they say the same thing. You don't have to carry your Medicare card. And if someone won't provide services for you, you can absolutely file a complaint with their office. Yeah. I guess there's a give and take on some of these. Okay. So
we'll have time for more questions.
We'll have time for more questions. I'm going to move on to the next couple topics because there's a lot of information and we have just a few minutes. Okay, the next one I want to talk about is a common scam that we see, and especially with older Americans, but the scam is the relative in need scam. So you get a phone call and it says, "Hi, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, I was in Tijuana with my buddies, we got arrested, and I'm in Mexican prison. Send help." Right? And when they say send help, they mean send money. And they'll tell you a Western Union account number that you can transfer money into for bail. Here in Washington, we get the phone calls from people saying, "Grandma, Grandpa, I was with my girlfriend in Vancouver, Washington, or Vancouver, British Columbia, and our car broke down. You can wire money to this account to help us get our car fixed," right? Which I don't understand. If you're in Mexico, people always use the "I was arrested down here," but if you're in Canada, it's like "my car broke down." I guess people aren't exactly afraid of being arrested in Canada. Yeah. But the principle is the same, right? The phone call, it's a relative in need or a friend or someone who claims they know you. They say they need help. Send money in an untraditional method, right? Western Union or somehow. And then it always follows up with this line: "But don't tell mom and dad." Yeah. So the lessons we learn from this scam are the same as the other ones, is that your family members, if they call you, what do? You hang up the phone, right? You don't have to talk to people on the phone. Speaking with people on the phone is absolutely always, always your choice, and you can hang up the phone. Now, if it is a family member, what do then? You hang up the phone, and what do? I knew you guys were rock stars. Yes, you call them. You call them and you say, "Hey, I just got a phone call from you. Are you in jail?" Obviously, they're not. If they don't answer the phone, you call somebody who knows them, or you let it wait. If they're in a Mexican prison, or if they're in a tire shop in Canada, they'll be there for a while. You have time. You have time to check this out. You don't have to send money right away. But the biggest thing we learn from this is that they want you to keep it a secret. And my philosophy is that nothing good happens in secret. Whether it's investing money, whether it's sharing money, whether it's helping out friends and family, nothing good happens in secret. There's usually a story I tell about sweepstakes and lottery, about a woman in King County who was contacted by Publishers Clearinghouse, or someone pretending to be Publishers Clearinghouse, and they told her she won $9.2 million. She was 90 years old, and they said, what are you going to do with this money? And she goes, oh, it's my legacy to my family. And the guy said, great, let's keep it a surprise. Nothing good happens in secret. Whether it's sweepstakes, lottery, financial investment, if your doctor tells you that he's going to give you treatment and tells you, but don't tell anybody, nothing good happens in secret, right? These are things that are sound like common sense, but we don't think about it when we're in the situation. When we're there, we're all human, right? And we all want to think the best, hope the best, want the best. And so when someone tells us they've got a deal for us, we want to believe it's true. So if I could leave you with anything about this today, scams and fraud, is that government and businesses aren't going to threaten you. Legitimate businesses don't force you to send a non-traceable payment method like a debit card or a prepaid debit card or iTunes gift cards. These scammers love their music. Or Western Union, MoneyGram, things like that. Nothing good happens in secret. And the best thing that you can do is to educate yourselves on different scams and fraud that are out there. Education is key to prevention. Now, I do this for a living and I still get scammed. And so there's nothing wrong with being the victim of a scam. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. My most recent victim of a scam moment was I bought some concert tickets on Craigslist. I paid with PayPal, because PayPal is a secure payment method and they reimburse if you're scammed. So my scam situation was I didn't get to go to the concert, but I didn't lose any money. But for a lot of people, that's not the way it goes down. They end up losing money. Some people can be scammed to the point of losing their homes, losing their transportation, losing their entire checkings and savings accounts, even losing their medical benefits. So education is key. Understanding what's behind these scams is important. I'm going to talk for just one quick second about identity theft. I say one quick second because identity theft is a huge topic. I mean, huge. It's such a large topic that I give a full day conference on this. I work with organizations and we do a full day of identity theft training. So what I'm going to leave you about identity theft is that identity theft is just someone taking your personal information, your name, address, email address, birth date, social security number, your information that identifies you, and using it without your permission to acquire loans, credit, employment, or to hide from the government. And your file your tax returns, yeah. So that's what identity theft is. The average person who experiences identity theft takes about 600 hours to recover. 600 hours works out to be 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, for about 13 weeks. That's almost 3 months of full-time work. Most of us don't have 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for 3 months, so it takes 6 months or a year or 2 years to fully recover. We talked about the Social Security information on your Medicare cards, on your Social Security number, on your checkbooks, things like that. That's the information that you want to protect. Those are the things that people want to take from you. Most identity theft, and I think this is pertinent to this group specifically, is that somewhere around 35 to 40% of identity theft that is committed by somebody who has access to a person who needs extra services. It's by a caregiver, it's by a cleaning person, it's by an in-home healthcare. we're finding that a lot of this stuff happens from people who have access to the person, friends or family or a caregiver or someone with access to the home. Now, I don't want you to be skeptical now. Like, you know, I can see across the room some of you are questioning your spouses now. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to make you skeptical of this, but what I want you to understand is that it's possible that if someone has access to your information, they could misuse it. So the best preventative measure, the absolute best preventative measure of identity theft is to keep your information safe and secure. If you have, of course you have trusted people in your life that you would trust anything with at this point, right? And those are the people you trust with that information. But everybody else, well, maybe they don't need that. There's a quote somewhere that says, the most honest people never face the temptation to be dishonest, right? So if you remove that temptation from people who are otherwise honest, like you don't leave your checkbook laying around, or you don't leave your Medicare statements laying around, or you don't leave just general information about yourself laying on the kitchen counter, and I'm guilty of this too. I pay rent and set the checkbook on the counter and forget it there for weeks. Because, you know, we're busy. You forget about it. Protect your information and don't give people the opportunity to be dishonest, and that's the best way to prevent identity theft. There's a ton more information about identity theft on identitytheft.gov. It's an FTC website where you can go and learn more information. I did check with them to see if it was screen reader accessible, and they said, we'll check and get back to you. And that was about 4 weeks ago, so. I will check again, but you're welcome to go check it on your own. It's identitytheft.gov, and it's the one-stop shop about identity theft issues. That's all I had for that information. We're going to take questions here, but before we start taking questions, I wanted to say thank you again so much for inviting me to come speak to your group. You guys have learned so much information this morning from your other speakers, and I hope that this was useful. What I have are some brochures that we had printed in Braille. The brochures say what's about our office, about my division, and then some contact information on how to call us and or go online and find out more information. We do want to hear from you. We do want you to file complaints with us. My slogan is complain often and complain everywhere. It sounds like my mother-in-law, but it's I love my mother-in-law. No. Yeah. She's a great woman, I'll be honest. But complain often and complain everywhere. Complain is not a bad word. And as far as our office goes, on the brochures printed in Braille, there's a 1-800 number where we have people on the phones Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. So if you leave a message outside of those hours, they'll call you back. But Monday through Friday on the phone, they can help you. They can help you file a complaint over the phone if you're unable to file a complaint online. And they can also answer any questions you have about scams or fraud. So if you do get a phone call or a letter in the mail or you have any questions about maybe this doesn't sound legitimate, you can put it on hold and you can call us and we can help answer your questions. Okay, now I see some hands coming up for questions.
Okay. Okay, do we have a
mic? There's a mic.
There was a ma'am in the back. I didn't get your name, but you had your hand raised and I said I would come back to you first. Oh, no, you asked the Medicare question. Yeah, I'm sorry. I want to make sure we're catching everybody.
Okay. We only have time for two questions. Sorry.
Thank you for coming. So my question is about foreign scams. The ones you get, the IRS calls from India or the internet scam from Nigeria. Is there anything that can be done if you get a foreign scam and you're a victim of that? Is there anything like your office would be able to do?
That's an excellent question. The question was about foreign scams, the IRS scams from India. Some of you may have heard, but just recently the FBI and the Indian government busted one of the IRS scams in India. They arrested 60 people right on the spot, and they held 200 other people in the building for question. They ended up arresting, I think, somewhere around 72 people for prosecution. This particular outfit had scammed Americans out of $320 million. Their average take-in for the day was somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 of money that they were able to get from people across the country. So when that operation was busted, the FBI now is asking for extradition orders to bring them back to the states and face criminal charges here. But if you are a victim of those scams, unfortunately, when they're overseas-based, there's not a lot that we can do. which is why we say education is prevention. We still want to hear about them. We still want you to complain about them and tell us what's going on. But the overseas operation scams, if once you're a victim, once they have your money, there's not much we can do at that point until the Indian government arrests them and sends them our way. Does that answer your question, sir?
Okay.
Oh, the Nigerian prince scams.
Same thing.
Same thing, but everyone in this room, I'm sure, has a Nigerian prince uncle or cousin who just wants to give us money, right?
$5 million,
absolutely. It's the same idea. They're generally not legitimate. I would say generally because I don't want to say that you don't have family that in Nigeria, but it's unlikely that any of us do. So in that case, it's the same idea. Education is prevention, and you can report the scams to either our office or the FTC. There was another question over here.
Okay, I have a quick question. I'm JR. Two things that my question is revolving on. One, my Medicare card number is under my mother's Social Security number. The second thing is what are you, your opinion on this robo, scam thing? You've won the trip to Florida or mm-hmm. the Keys, pay this amount of money to get your free vacation trip.
Absolutely. So I think a lot of us have gotten that phone call too, right? And it usually starts with a boat foghorn, the ball. You've won. Right? I get them incessantly. In fact, I probably get about one of those calls every other day, the robocalls. There's a couple of things you can do to help protect yourself from these phone scams. And I don't have the information in large print or in Braille. In fact, I don't think the FTC prints it in large print or Braille. But you can call our office and get that information from us. But there's the National Do Not Call Registry. The National Do Not Call Registry, I can hear everyone moaning already. What I recommend is that you put your name on that list twice a year. When you change the batteries in your smoke detector, you put your name back on that list. And the reason for that is because legitimate businesses, they follow the Do Not Call Registry. So you're not going to get phone calls from legitimate businesses. Will this stop those phone calls, the robocalls, the you've won this cruise calls? No. But when you get those calls, you can assume that they're not legitimate. Now, there are three exceptions. There's a lot of exceptions, but three primary exceptions to the Do Not Call list. The first is it wouldn't be a very good law if politicians didn't write themselves out of it. So if you sign up for the Do Not Call list, politicians can still call you, and they can still solicit contributions or support. The second is charities. Legitimate charitable organizations are still allowed to call you. When they do, I recommend you hang up the phone, or you tell them, do not call me again, take me off your list. Giving money over the phone to a charity is always risky, always. And so we recommend that you always give in person or you plan your giving ahead of time. So when you do get a phone call, you can just say no. And the third part that can call you is a business that you have done business with in the past. So let's assume you've had a contractor come to your home and install something. That contractor can now call you even if you're on the Do Not Call list. So that's a good question. Does that answer your question, sir?
The other thing, a part of that was, wasn't it, I just heard a few years ago that, like that you were just saying, the politicians and everything, mm-hmm. I thought in the state of Washington they made a law passed where it was illegal for them to be doing, like, the donations. Like, I got one mm-hmm. just last week from a fire department.
Yeah, so that's another good point is So what politicians in Washington state can't do is robocall and ask for donations, but they can call and ask for support. Now, on top of that, it's the same thing, right? But they can't flatly ask for money. They have to kind of say, are you willing to support this candidate? Can I send you something in the mail? They'll never send someone to your home to pick up contributions. Never, ever. It's illegal in the state of Washington. But your other part about that was the firefighters, right?
Yeah.
You get phone calls that says, hello, this is the firefighter or the policeman's guild or this is John Smith with the Department of Fallen Warriors and we'd like you to donate money for their families. First of all, there are laws in Washington State where legitimate charitable solicitations cannot include the words fire department, fire, police, police department, veteran, or prisoner of war. There's a list of things that are definite descriptors that legitimate charities cannot use. So if you do get a phone call from someone who said, I'm calling from the fire department, whatever, that's not a legitimate charity. And if it is a legitimate charity, they're doing it wrong, and I wouldn't give them anyways. The best thing to do, if you want to give, and it's always good to give, if you have the ability to give, it's good, but research your charities. You can call our office or the Secretary of State's office and verify that a charity is registered. You can research the charity yourself, or you can give locally and say, you know what, I know where the fire department is, and I'm just going to go there and ask them where do I give to contribute. To give directly to the organization cuts out the administrative cost that a lot of these commercial fundraisers take when they call your home. Does that answer your question?
Thank you very much, Eric. Join me in thanking Eric for a very good... And with that, I'm going to turn over the emceeing to Frank Cuda.
I know. We've got another one.
I don't know how to turn it off, so.
Okay, I'll take it.
Got it. Okay.
Okay, well, I'm an odd person to put to MC a cooking panel. My cooking skills consist of corn dogs and pizza. But, you know. So we have a program. Next program item is Common Sense Cooking. We have Jackie Cabrera and Randy Tendrell. Are you guys up here yet?
I'm here.
Randy? Is Jackie here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I'm up here at the table. All right. Pass me, Randy. Yep. Right here.
Okay, Jackie is a chef and owner of See What Is Cooking, catering, and Randy is the proprietor of, is it Avia?
Avia
Cafe. And which one of you wants to go first? Jackie, go ahead. Are you going to come to the podium here or use the mic there? All right. And I hope to learn something from this. So. I'm listening.
I hope I can be able to teach you.
Okay.
Right here. Okay. Oh, Frank's really tall. Half a day. Hey, some of you still remember what half a day means, huh? That means hello in our language from the island of Guam. A little spit on the map. So, as you know, my name is Jackie Cabrera. I've been totally blind for about 15 years already. And I received my independent living training at the Orientation and Training Center, and also received, I used to be a member of the South Kitsap County, and then I'm also a member of the Capital City now, and I also received my certification in the Culinary Arts at the Western Culinary Institute in Portland, Oregon. Yes. And mind you, I had to go all the way down to Portland, Oregon, because I was turned down here at Seattle Culinary Arts because I'm blind. So, yeah. Well, on the brighter side, I received the honors award down at W, over at Western Culinary Institute. And it was just actually a wonderful experience. So not bummed out because I went down and got what I needed to do. And so here I am today. So first of all, Randy and I had talked about what we were going to, I guess, discuss. He was supposed to lead and I was just supposed to interject. But since, what a gentleman. So anyhow, with common, with what is it called? Common Sense Cooking?
Yes.
Okay, Common Sense Cooking. We wanted to do a food demo, but there was no way that we were going to be able to do it because of, the, equipment and, we don't have any sink in here and I think the room is a little bit smaller. So I did bring some food. You know where Jackie is. There'll be some kind of food. Well, I am hoping that you guys would like it. It'll be a quinoa salad. Okay, let's all clap all at one time now.
Hey, Jackie.
And it's just basically because I'm also trying to promote a healthy salad as well. But you'll be leaving with a little sweet treat, which is a chocolate explosion cake. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at that. Yeah, that always happens when I do a description. Every time we do catering, it's always like, ooh, ah, but when it comes to the dessert, it's like, oh. So anyhow, as many of you may know, with visually impaired and blind people, with cooking and being around in the kitchen, the first basic thing is getting orientated in your kitchen. And also, another thing is, how often are you going to be in your kitchen? Because I can show you this and I can show you that, but it's how much will you make use of it? It's almost like using our computer, right? Yes. So if you don't use it, you'll lose it. And that could be in your mind too. So, a lot of things that I would do in my own kitchen at home, it's good for me because Dee does not mind at all that I do all the cooking in the house. As long as she drives for me, I'll continue to cook. I have different things that are set up in my home as well because, of course, everything that's going to be planned out and what I use for the catering is set up in the way I do it. And I know that for many of us that do the cooking, of course, one of the first sense that we is our smelling and our feeling because we got to feel the items that we are working with. So, anyhow, is how many of you are very interested in cooking? Raise your hand so I can see. Oh, you guys are good listeners. And second of all, in order to teach you guys really how to do the cooking, a lot of it, and I explained that, and Randy and I both know that, it's got to be hands-on. Even if I try to tell you, okay, Randy is slicing the cucumber now on a bias, if you don't know what a cucumber feels like, then you will have no knowledge what a bias cut will feel like.
Jackie, what's
right? Randy just asked me what's a bias. In English, diagonal. That's close enough. So, anyhow, first thing that we do is go into the kitchen and feel around. Obviously, many of us know that. How many of you have received training at the Orientation and Training Center? All right. Raise your hand. So, as many of you know, there we are also taught with labeling and how to set up things and organizing, correct? Now you have to do also though what works for you in your kitchen. And how many of us are living or have a sighted partner or spouse or a lot of sighted family members in the house? And how many of us go through the trouble of when they don't put things back? Yes. So that's why it's very important that we create our own area, if you had. And first thing also that is safety, correct?
Yes.
I had mentioned to Randy that I work with a lot of knives. I don't like working with small knives. I like working with the big and heavy knives. I brought a sample to share with you guys, and I'll have Dee. Before I go on, I'd like to introduce you, Dee Delgado. Maybe some of you guys might know her. She's my driver. Yes. And one of the first things that you would, I think that would help you guys do. How many of you guys know what knife guards are? Knife guards, knife sleeves. How many of you guys guard your knives with those knife guards? Oh, very good. See, Randy? You see how many of them?
I saw that. Raise your hand.
Oh, awesome. Those are the kind of things, that's just an example of things that we need to, of course, as part of our safety and making sure that we organize things in the way that we know them to be and that they are put back. How many of us label our items in the kitchen?
Yes.
All in Braille?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like for some of us, like for me, I'm not able to read the standard Braille. So I can only do the jumbo Braille. So went to the OTC and carried 3 books around all the time. So I also found different ways, because I spend 99% of my time in the kitchen, I found a lot of different ways to help me in the kitchen. And that, of course, is by using different kind of containers, different kinds of bottles. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with a lot of different sauces or what. I am very into a lot of Asian and island cooking. So, you know, we use a lot of different types of sauces in our foods. And I had to come up with this even using Velcro, using rubber bands, and just using different sizes. I've also gotten into saving. How many of you are familiar with the 48-ounce cream cheese boxes? Okay. Well, those boxes, I've used those boxes. I've saved those boxes. And I use that to categorize actually all my stuff and my spices for international cooking. Because it's one way to actually keep it organized. So I know if I'm going to be cooking Japanese, I have all my stuff from my toasted sesame seeds to my furikake, to my mirin, to my rice vinegar, and everything that's going to be in Japanese. How many of you guys categorize? Not too many, right? Well, big hand for you that categorizes back there. But is it because of not knowing, probably, or maybe not being too familiar, or maybe not spending a lot of time in the kitchen? Is it all of the above? Okay. Right. So and I know that that's going to be, and that's one of the thing when it comes to doing a session on things dealing with food, because we can give all the common sense stuff. But again, it goes back to the feel. Because also in order to know what we're eating, we need to know what the ingredients are. Correct? So I'm also going to need your help by asking me some questions, so then that way I could be able to give you, because my kitchen is going to be set up differently from your kitchen. Because again, you have to do what is going to work for you. Just like the conversation, of course, Randy's cafe is going to be set up very differently from his home. That would be the same for me. Wherever we are catering, I have to adjust to the kitchen, but I have to make sure that Dee or one of the gals who's helping us will orientate me. But most of the cooking is done already because I know where the things are in my kitchen. So, Randy, you can interject anytime.
Well, I didn't want to overshadow.
Come over here. Because for me, it's mostly I like to get down dirty and do the cooking right here. So, but I can't do that now. So, I'll have Randy add in some things.
The main thing I can add to what Jackie's saying, as far as orientation, that's critical. I have found the easiest way for me to orientate myself in my kitchen and to know where things are to figure things out in my kitchen is to ask my chef or my cook to get it for me. That works really well. So if you have a chef or cook at your place, at your home, that works excellent. What she's saying, though, what I want to comment on is safety. Safety, safety. Safety, safety. Can't say that enough, safety. It's different for me in my kitchen at the cafe because I have a food slicer, and that food slicer can remove fingers, you know, things like that. Most people aren't going to have a food slicer at home. But that doesn't mean that you should be unaware of what's around you. And just knowing your kitchen, as she has said, I can't say much more that Jackie hasn't said, orientate your kitchen. Know where things are kept and how they are kept. Where are your knives? Do you have knives? And another thing that we talked about was how sharp is your knives? That's poor language. How sharp are your knives? Are they sharp or are they dull? It's easier to cut yourself with a dull knife than it is with a sharp knife. When you're using a dull knife, it's like using a sledgehammer on a melon. It just doesn't, not pretty. If you're using a sharp knife, it slices clean, it slices pure. And if you do happen to nick yourself, the stitches are a lot easier to take care of. Jackie and I, however, were talking about this. Jackie and I were talking about this. And you know what? With sharp knives, and we use knives often, daily, I actually nicked myself for the first time the other day in about 30 years. And that's not necessarily because I have sharp knives, but just because I'm very careful with where I have my hands and how you hold my food. And that's something that would have to be a hands-on demonstration for you.
How do you recommend them sharpen?
What's that?
How do you recommend them sharpen?
There's
sharpeners.
There's a lot of different knife sharpeners. If you don't want to sharpen a knife yourself, you go to Joann Fabrics and take your knives with you. I wouldn't recommend that because of the bevel they put on there. The angle that it comes to is much wider than what we need on a knife. The angle on the knife blade should be about 26 degrees for a standard chef knife. With the Japanese style of knife, it's a much thinner. Shitako, yeah. That's what, about 20 degrees on that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's about 20 degrees on Chautauqua. So that's a different thing. That's a lot of garbage for you that if you don't use knives often. So, but the best way, I use a steel often, and that does not sharpen the knife, but it realigns the edge of the knife. It kind of helps detract burrs from that. And I'm old fashioned. I got my culinary degree back in the 80s, while I was sighted. And I'm an old, give me a whetstone and a knife and I'll have it sharpened in a couple of minutes. That's not a big deal. These are all things that you can learn. And I would strongly suggest that if you have not already, besides your training at the Orientation and Training Center, I trained under Letha there, that you, maybe check out some of your local, a lot of community colleges has cooking classes, things like that. And I would recommend that you maybe go to there if you're not cooking. How much are you cooking? Before I went to the BEP, the Business Enterprise Program, which I'll be talking about more tomorrow, before I went to the Business Enterprise Program, I was a master at Marie Callender pot pies. I could cook you a Marie Callender pot pie like you wouldn't believe. Nice flaky crust, you know, put the butter on the crust and just good eating. Okay, if that's where you are, then that's fine. As long as you're eating a balanced diet, as long as you're eating healthy. That's one thing nice about a lot of the frozen foods that are out there now, the frozen meals, is that they're actually healthier than they were back a few years ago. Okay, as far as the safety though, I just can't, you know, did you spill something? Stop. Don't go any farther when you spill something on the floor or on the counter. Stop. Do you have a towel nearby? Do you have paper towels? In my kitchen, if I'm working on something, if I'm slicing the meats or the cheeses, or if I'm cutting up onions or whatever, I usually have a towel nearby so that if I do spill something, I can stop. And if I have to, I just drop it on the floor if that's where the spill is. And if I need to, I don't like doing this because if I have to get down to clean it up on the floor, that means I got to take off my gloves that I'm working on. It means I got to wipe up the mess and I have to go and wash my hands again, dry them, and then I have to put the gloves back on because if I'm handling food in the kitchen that's not going to be cooked again, I wear gloves. And so that just that's a standard safety feature that I protect my customers with, and to help prevent the spread of disease. I don't have any diseases, but it's one of those things that the law requires in our state and our nation. So if you spill, stop, pick it up, clean it up. Don't, otherwise you track things all over the place. I've done that before, and it's not a pretty sight having Randy footprints in oil going across the kitchen. You know, just not a pretty sight at all, especially when I'm the one that has to do the mopping. I just, you know, sometimes my staff just doesn't listen to me. So, but just be careful when you're doing, think safety. I can't stress that enough, because most of the accidents that happen in the kitchen are due to carelessness, are due to inattentiveness. You're thinking about that last play that Russell Wilson made when he won the Super Bowl, which is still in the future, this next January, February, of course. But, you know, you're thinking about that when you should be paying attention to the fact that you just stuck your hand in a boiling pot of cheese. That's just, you know, that's a, just not pretty. I mean, that last play that he made in the Super Bowl, your hand may look fine in boiled cheese. I don't know. So anyway, you just want to think of the safety. And also, if you can, as Jackie has said, organize your kitchen. And that goes beyond just knowing where everything is. When you're making something, organize how you're making it. If you have a recipe you're following, organize the recipe. Organize how you're going to do things. Step one, I need these three things. That's going in first. These next three things are going in second. I've got to, and then organize how you're putting it together and lay it out in a pattern so that you are working from beginning to end or in a fashion that works best for you. As Jackie has said, I can't disagree with anything she has said so far, is the fact that just be organized. Be organized for yourself.
Can I add in something about the knives?
Absolutely. She wants to add things about sharp knives. Yeah. Or full knives.
Oh, you're another tall one. I also wanted to add in about the knives. If you are cutting and the knives happen to fall, let it fall.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Do not try to catch it.
It gets really messy if you do.
It gets super messy.
Yeah.
I had a Zorro sign on my palm. And it's you know, in the culinary school, everything is go, 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 go. You know, and I'm chopping away. Okay. All of a sudden somebody comes and talks to me. And so I put the knife, I was getting ready to put it down, and they were yelling in the kitchen. The knife falls out of my hand. Guess what happened? Just by natural instinct, I was going to catch the knife because I thought I could see where it's at. Sometimes I forget I'm blind. And oh boy. But it wasn't a deep cut. It skinned me. But that was the last time I caught a knife. So just to let you know. And also, if you're in your kitchen, and I do suggest that you have, if you are able to have some special tennis shoes that you can use in the kitchen. That's also another, if you're not able to get some safety shoes, using shoes or something with a closed toe is also another good idea to have. I heard Frank asking here about knife sharpeners. They do have small ones that you can actually, like maybe the size, maybe half of your cell phone sizes that they do have that you can get. You have when you need to do a quick, and they usually have one side for the rough side for your dull knives, and they have the other side for the smooth side to smoothen your knives out. They also have the tri-stones, where you have the rough, medium, and then you have the fine-tuning. But before you can do that, if you don't really know how to sharpen the knives, it is best to get an idea of how to sharpen the knife. I also wanted to add in, while I was over at the culinary school, one of the first things that they had told us when we first started, and me being the only blind one and the first blind one to ever attend Western Culinary Institute, I had to make sure that I was going to keep up with everybody. I had to make sure that I watch my back. I have to make sure that I do things to defend myself, because I know if anything goes wrong in that kitchen, who are they going to blame? Yes. So one of the first things they had told us was, all right, you guys are just starting. No flamboyant. Okay, and that's when you are cook, you do these, you know, with the chefs, they throw down these, wine, on a high hot, pan, whether it's a wok or a frying pan, and then they throw down the alcohol on it, and then a big flame comes up. But you only do that for show, and you only do that if you know what you're doing. So one of my classmates decided to do that. And in the culinary school, you have like about 6 gas stoves lined up all in a row. So you are working side by side with everybody. So what happens? One of my classmates decides, oh, I'm going to throw this liquor down. Boom. Well, guess what? All I said was, not the blind lady, not the blind lady, not the blind lady. Because it was a sighted person that did that. And the chef came up and started to laugh and goes, ah, rock star, you just know how to watch your... I said, I know they were going to blame me, but I'm smart. I'm smarter than that. I know what I'm doing, you know. And maybe one advantage that I do have, and I don't know if it's the same for Randy, is because we used to see. So a lot of the things we are able to visualize. But also being blind for such a long time, of course, when we're feeling the items and stuff like that, that's where it comes to play, where you do get to know. Because some of the items, I don't even know if I saw it when I had sight. So anyhow, and one of the things that also motivated me was when Galen Floyd had approached me and asked if I'd be able to do a cooking workshop. And you know me, I love to do whatever skills that I have gained and I know, I love to apply. If you want to learn, I'll teach you. And I would teach you what I know. And one of the most inspirational moments for me was working, I think, with those 10 students. I think there was 10. Ages 13 to 18. Or 12 to 18. And I'm not going to forget young Garrett.
What's his name?
Garrett was his name. He was afraid to touch the skillet. He didn't even want, we were just going to make a simple thing as grilled cheese. He didn't want to touch the skillet. He didn't want to put butter on the bread. He didn't want to do anything because he was scared. And I said, you know what? I was once in your shoes. Let me help you. And I told him, this is how you could check if your skillet is hot. Come on. So I said, that's what I mean by hands-on. I took his hand to let him feel the skillet. And he goes, oh, it's hot. And he can see some, but he would have to move real close to see. And I said, all right, this is what we're going to do now. We're going to butter the bread on each side. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to lay it down, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, I'm scared. I said, come on, you can do it. I'm right here. When he, and I said, all right, let's turn that bread down where the butter side is at. And I said, listen to the sizzle. And so he goes, oh, I can hear it. I said, all right, try to feel where your bread is at and take your cheese and put it right on top. And so he had to feel for it. And he's, of course, trying to see with whatever sight he had. And I said, now you're going to take the other bread. And he did that. And I said, okay, I don't really hear the sizzle. Do you hear it? He says, no. I said, all right, it's time to flip. I taught him how to use the spatula, and he flipped that grilled cheese over. That young man went from doing, being scared to do one grilled cheese to putting 14 out on that day. And I told Galen, I said, I'm so inspired by this, and I hope that we'll be able to do more for the students because, you know, these are the kind of things. I'm blind. They're visually impaired and blind. And you know what? We need to support each other. So anyhow, I wanted to share a couple of those stories because I just have a lot of inspirational moments. And it's things like that that move me. And I just wanted to share with you that I live all the way down in Lacey. But if any of you need cooking tips, would like to learn hands-on, you can give me a call. The only thing is you would have to come to Lacey.
Okay.
Yes.
We want some time for questions. And we got about time for 3 or 4 questions. And we have a mic. Do we have a mic runner? Thank you.
Okay.
This question? Here we go.
I think Dee's passing the vegetables.
Oh, sorry. My name is Josette. I'm from Vancouver, BC, and we're not fortunate enough up there to have the type of support in the way of, you know, Department of Services for the Blind. I learned how to cook at a very young age myself. I lived on a farm, dairy farm. I was treated like everybody else and had to, you know, learn how to cook, you know, just being around sighted people. But I figured out very quickly what I had to do to, you know, the different ways of doing things, obviously. And then when I went into high school from blind school, I took foods and nutrition. No, I just was commenting. Well, I took three courses of foods and nutrition. Okay, sorry. Well, I just wanted to share this with people, that's all. That I was taking three courses of foods and nutritions, and I had to educate them in school, you know, the different ways we had to do things. That's mainly what I wanted to say, and
yes,
I've been cooking ever since, quite a bit of stuff, so thanks.
Thank you. But we have our speakers up here, and they're up here for just a short period of time, and if people have questions, go ahead.
Okay, I got one comment. Hi, Jackie, it's JR.
Oh, boy. Hi, JR.
I'm waiting for the guava.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. The one question I got, just the panel before us, we had about accessibility. Now, when you went down to the culinary school on the accessibility stuff, now, when you're talking about learning the kitchen, did they provide any, like, talking equipment? Or?
No, they did not. They did not provide any talking equipment, but the chefs all were very well aware that I'm totally blind because I went down to meet with them, and what they did was they actually hands-on walked me through, and as they were walking the students through it, of course, because even if they're sighted, they need to get orientated with what they had around, they made me feel everything, and that's how come I was able to memorize all of. And just to add in that, I don't actually have things that talk. I don't know if I'm wording this right, but my tools are very simple. I don't have anything that talks. And it goes back again to how often are you going to be in your kitchen? Because once you learn how to use that simple tool, you don't need one that's going to talk unless it's a thermometer.
Well, I was going to ask about thermometer or scale of weight.
They provided that for me as well.
Oh.
Yes.
I use a talking thermometer and a talking scale when I'm portioning out meats and cheeses.
Yes, because that's basically what you'll really need it out for if you're going to be portioning. Yep. And before I add on to the next question, Dee is going to be passing out some ingredients real quick. And those are the ingredients that I have in the quinoa salad, just so you can smell and feel. It's a little different if we had the opportunity for you to taste it and stuff. Well, do not eat the quinoa. It's raw. But so you get an idea of what it is. And there's also cucumbers and bell peppers, small and big, cilantros, and red onions. There's some curry powder, sesame oil, and balsamic vinegar.
I had a question.
Yeah. No, they're actually
talking timers. Do you use a talking timer or do you just, I mean, how do you know?
Oh, yes. I use my iPhone.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. Gina Allen.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. My husband cooks steak with an air cooker that he has and he likes to season it. But when he cooks the steak, the seasoning does not stay on the steak. How can he fix that?
When is he putting the seasoning on the steak?
Before he puts it on.
How far in advance?
Well, before he puts it in the air fryer.
Hmm.
5 minutes or an hour or two?
No, he puts the seasoning on and then puts it in the air fryer.
Oh. What kind of seasoning is he using?
He's using nature's seasoning because we don't use salt.
Oh, it's nature seasoning.
I'm not familiar with that.
Is it very coarse, the seasoning?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, that's probably why. A lot of the times if the seasoning is more coarse, it is harder to stay on the meat than when it's granulated type.
Also, is he just shaking it on or is he rubbing it into the meat?
Yeah.
I think he's shaking it on and then, you know, rubbing it. I'm not sure if he's rubbing it in the meat or not.
You gotta massage it.
Yeah, gotta massage it in.
Okay,
gotta make
I'll
it part of the meat.
Yes, yes. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Anybody else?
More questions? Somebody over there on the right got a mic?
Your King West solids are in a 2-ounce cups, and those are for you to taste, and if we have any extras. So, and if any of you guys are allergic to almonds, we do have the ones that do not have almonds. So I hope nobody's allergic to avocado oil or sesame oil. I'm giving you guys what I put in it, so it's just in case you are allergic to it.
And she wouldn't share the recipe with me.
No, no mushrooms.
And quinoa?
Yes. You have all those fresh vegetables there, cilantros. And this is a very pretty much a healthy salad because you've got all the fresh vegetables in there. There's no meat. There's no – so it's bell peppers, cilantros, cucumbers, zucchini, cranberries, and raisins. Yeah. So I hope you guys like it.
Can you come back later and cook us dinner?
Yes, I have a question.
Can you pay her prices?
Go ahead.
Yes. Okay, next question
There. There's a lot of instructions for the cooking. It said, cook until golden brown. Mm-hmm. That I always have a problem. I can't tell when it's a golden brown.
Okay.
And, yeah, and another thing is kind of the same thing. How can you cook a steak for medium rare when you cannot see how pink or red in the middle is?
Yes, by timing it. Mm-hmm.
By timing it.
For golden brown, Dee, do you have like the fish turner there, the metal one? Right? The way I can tell for the golden brown is I use this fish turner in a pair of tongs. And I actually tap it.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. And it's gonna sound like, I don't know if you could hear that. There's a different sound, and that's also another thing about getting to know your food and when you're cooking it. Because obviously when you're putting it down, and you're feeling it with the, well, like in my case, I use that fish turner, a little, fish turner. When it becomes golden brown, there's a much more crispier texture to it. You'll be able to feel it with that. Unless if you are like me and just sometimes can tap the meat while it's on the fryer. Unless it's not deep fried.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
So deep fried is pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
How thick is the meat?
If you have a question, could you hold your hand up, please? Hold your hand up high. Now I can see.
Okay, this should be the last question.
Reaching in front of you. Here's your microphone.
So, yeah, you have to use gloves sometimes. But don't you have a? Isn't it hard to feel the food when you have gloves on, or do you use a certain kind of glove?
For me, I don't use gloves, and it's only because I need to feel. Yeah, I mean, in our situation, yeah, we gotta feel it, and that was one of the challenges I had. And I also, I'm not too sure if you guys are aware, you know, like if you get a cut and stuff, you know how you do use a glove? How many of you are aware if you get cut on your finger, of course after you, you nurse it and stuff, how many of you are aware that there is a finger condom out there? Alright, good, okay, what's that? Yeah, at the culinary school, they call them finger condoms. And boy, was I surprised. So just thought I'd let you know that. Walmart has them. Walgreens has them. Yeah.
No, not by that name.
No, not by that name.
If you find something by that name, it's in the drugstore section.
You should have seen the look on the gal's face. Yeah, when we asked for a finger condom, they were like, what? Guess where they sent us to? Sorry, I'm just being real.
Okay, please help me welcome. Okay. Thank you, Jackie and Randy. And we'll.
Yes, okay. And thank you all very much also for having us. And just to let you know, we have one of our signature cakes. It is the chocolate explosion. I think some of you may have tried it. It's a chocolate cake, and it's got cream cheese in it, some walnuts and coconut. Just letting you know, just in case if you guys are allergic to it. So I hope you guys enjoy it. There should be a fork taped onto your plastic as well. Once again, thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay. like to draw two door prizes to end our afternoon session. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not on. Oh, there we go. There we go. We actually got five here. If we can give them all away, or we only going to let us have two?
Now, let's see how long it takes to get a couple of
wins. Okay. So we got a $20 gift certificate from your chapter, Mr. Frank, Tri-Cities. So the winner is Darlene Hilling.
Yay! That one didn't take long.
Randy, you okay?
All right. That's the way to do it. The guide dog, Washington State guide dog users, Washington State. Let's see, we got Kitty Cummings for $10. Kitty Cummings, she's working?
What is she doing?
What is she doing?
No, that's not working.
That's not working? Okay, we'll draw another one. Here's that one. All right, then, how about... Kevin Berkery. Next, okay, we'll draw again here. Let me turn it around here. Tracy Fissure.
What's the last name?
Fissure.
Fissure.
Is it F-E-J-E-R-A-N? That's Feheran. She's here. She's in the back.
Oh, okay. All right, then.
Tracy, are you here?
Yeah.
Tracy's?
Oh, okay. Okay.
She was.
Yeah.
All right. She's not here. She is. Okay. Imelda Orcio. Ortio? Orcio? Imelda Orcio? O-R-T-I. Or Orciewicz. It is Orciewicz. Not here anymore. Okay, then we have Lynn Domingo. Lynn Domingo. Karen Johnson. Karen Johnson. We'll keep plugging away here. Let's see. We got Courtney Cole. No Courtney Cole. Okay. Well, Reggie George.
Ah, Reggie.
Reggie not here?
It's not.
He's sleeping. Oh. Oh boy. He's probably still working, hopefully. Tim Van Winkle.
He's in bed. He's napping. He missed out.
Well, I tried.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm Douglas and Candace.
Okay, we called this name before. I don't know how it got back in. Oh, okay. So Geoffrey Parker. Didn't win. All right. And then we have Michelle Denzer.
Oh, Michelle.
Michelle Denzer. Okay, not here. Okay. Well, we'll keep it plugging away here. How about Jan D'Arcy?
Jan.
Darcy. Jan Darcy. It's kind of spelled differently. All right. And...
Hey, Jackie.
Marie, I don't even know how you say this one. B-U-C-Z-Y-N-S-K-A. Buzinska. Let's see.
Oh, I'm going to speak up. I want to try it.
Then we have Javon Brinkley.
Hey, well,
somebody's got to be here.
Cindy's here.
Keep drawing. We'll find a line.
Carrie Lample.
Carrie
Lample? You here? All right. Okay.
All right. Okay, that's it. That's enough. Let's save the rest of them for
tomorrow.
We'll
save the rest for tomorrow. Remember, you got to be in the room. So we'll see you tomorrow for more. Okay.
All right, we got some announcements from Cindy.
We have a couple of announcements, Cindy. Really quickly, the talent show is tonight at 7:30, and. It will be next door where our meals were, so in A through C. If you are performing, you'll want to be in there. I didn't hear the exact time, but typically by 7 or so. And if you want to practice, you want to get in there even earlier than that. Remember, exhibits are taking place until 5 o'clock, so if you just haven't gotten in there yet, there's still time. So zip across the hall and go and check out exhibits. And the Life Members reception is for Life Members only. And that will be in the Snoqualmie Ballroom directly following the talent show at 9 o'clock. And Guide Dogs Breakfast is across the hall in Evergreen GF. And the general breakfast will be where we had lunch today in the morning. So, and if you're going to the guide dog breakfast, that starts at 7. Our breakfast, the regular one, is at 7:30. So I think that's all that I have for now. Don't lose your name tags. We're short on them. If you end up leaving early, please turn your name tag in at registration so we can recycle the badge. Thank you very much. And Steve... The Snoqualmie room is when you came down the hall, this long corridor. It's the first hallway to the right. So as you're heading back towards the lobby, it's the next hallway on the left. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. And Steve has an announcement. Thank you.
Dinner,
you're on your own.
Yep.
Okay. There you go.
Thank you.
Love seeing you.
Yeah.
We just had one of our guests lose a sweatshirt last night. It's a green sweatshirt with San Francisco written on it. If you picked it up by accident or have come across it and don't know where it goes, track me down and I'll get it back to her. It's kind of a sentimental value to it. So thank you. We'll see you yet tonight and tomorrow morning for sure.